Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the call. I think we've gotten past our technical difficulties this evening and excited to be with you and to discuss a topic that we announced last week. It's the topic of fear, and see if we can't dissect this topic to understand what creates it, how we can control it, so that it doesn't have the impact that it currently has on so many of our lives. We find a secret to this topic of fear in scroll 9. If you have your scrolls with you, you can turn to that particular scroll. This is Og Mandino talking when he mentions in scroll 9 that procrastination is born of fear. A very interesting thought. Back is born of fear. He goes on to tell us that this fear, which he recognizes as being mined from the hearts of all courageous souls. If we think about this, the word cœur, C-O-U-R, cœur, is French for heart. So when he says, and now I recognize the secret, my courageous hearts, that means the heart of hearts. So if we go into every courageous person, think about people in your life who have overcome tremendous odds, successful people in each one of your business. What we do know that these courageous hearts have all gone through a similar experience. This is not something that some avoid. This is something that every courageous soul dives into and overcome hearts and explored the inside of their heart. What we would discover is that they, in fact, have had some of their heart harrowed out by this fear and this anxiety, and they have overcome it. So what we do, we all will get to experience, and we all get to learn how to, what causes it, and how to manage it. Success demands this. Success demands that we learn how to overcome fear. Og goes on and says, and now I know that to conquer fear, I must always act without hesitation, and the flutters in my heart will vanish. Now I know that action reduces the lion of terror to an ant of equanimity. Equanimity is defined as peace of mind. If we want to have peace of mind, then we know that to conquer this fear, we must act without hesitation. I'd like to go and dissect with you, if I may, some of the great sources of fear. We know that there is a fear that can come from external sources, such as a rattle out here on the road, too far from our home last week. A rattlesnake, if you've ever encountered a live rattlesnake, just the sound can just put your nerves on edge. It's designed to do so. That's a certain kind of fear. If you've ever been in the presence of a wild bear, there's a little anxiety. When Ramona and I were in Fiji diving with the sharks, and I ran out of air at 80 feet of water, there's a little... But that's a certain kind of fear that comes. It's from a very real threat. Very real threat. You're out of air at 80 feet down, you can die. Shark attacks you, you can die. Bear attacks, you can die. Snake bites, you can kill you. Someone who has a knife and is in a position of attacking or threatens you with a gun. These things can create real fear. Someone pulls out in front of you in the freeway and you slam on your brakes and you barely miss, or you actually have a collision and your adrenaline is just pumping and the cortisol in your body is just pumping. You almost feel weak. You're in a state of shock. That's fear from an external source. That is not the fear we're going to talk about tonight. The fear we're going to talk about tonight is the fear that we create through our own thought processes and with our own expectations. This fear we can learn to control. It's also the most common source of fear. What we do know is this kind of fear, an unknown author calls false evidence appearing real. Now, we've all heard that. As I began to understand the physiology of what's happening when we're experiencing that kind of false evidence appearing real. It becomes very interesting because the single greatest source of this kind of fear, which is debilitating, is an unmet expectation. It is something that occurs because of a previous commitment, mental commitment. So let's walk through and understand this sequence. When we first get into a business, we can often get very excited, almost sleepless, excited about all of the possibilities. We might even engage in what is called fantasy. Now, I've talked about this briefly in the past, but let's understand it in the context of fear. Because fear, greatest source is unmet expectation. Unmet expectation is created by fantasy. So anytime we take a very active thought process, if you've got your assessment handy, the thought processes that most commonly impact fear is analytical in the external world, or are. It's analytical in the external world and goal setting in your internal world. Both those are measurement number 9. These are thought processes about thinking, thinking about thinking. And when those are orange and red, just take a look at your assessment, analytical, goal setting. When those become orange and red, it just says we have got a tremendous amount of activity going on in our mind. A lot of obsessive thinking. We also know that in this part of the mind, as I shared a couple weeks ago, the systemic mind, it gets very attached to whatever it is we're thinking about. So if you've got an orange and red bar, it's going to be very critical as we have this discussion tonight. If you want to lessen the fear, mitigate the fear, is for you to first be very cautious about how you use these two thought processes. If you were to escape into going into the future to when you'll have something you currently don't have, a house that you'd love to have, a dream home, a dream car, your debts paid off, a wonderful bank account. If you're in this kind of a space with this kind of a thought, the mind is going to create what is called a mental construct. Just write that down. Mental construct. That means it's constructed this idea. In addition to the mental construct, which would be a scientific term, we also call this event an expectation. An expectation meaning a concrete condition for happiness. So now we've created this. Now let's just make sure we understand this. Whenever you're driving down the street and you let your mind wander undisciplined into some glorious, wonderful place in the future of when this sale comes through and that sale comes through and these people do this and those four people do that, and you're starting to decorate your house and you're starting to live in that space of when you have this money, then, and you're doing the then in your mind. Because of these two thought processes, analytical and goal setting, if they're orange and red, you're at a very high risk to create a mental construct. The same brain chemistry, brain circuitries occur that would occur if you're actually there. This is at the crux of one of the great challenges in home-based businesses, network marketing, direct sales. People are drawn into those often and begin to fantasize about what it's going to be like when and then. Now, when we engage in this, that is the mind's new reality. That's its reality. Now, when that is its reality, it's very unlikely that life is going to show up that way for a while. So every time it doesn't, say for an example that we're lying in bed at night and we haven't fallen asleep, we're just thinking. Everybody else is asleep. This used to be my favorite time for fantasy, when I would think about creating this or creating that and what this would happen and what would happen as a result of that. And all those thought processes we have. Some people do it when they're at work. Some people do it when they're driving. Wherever your place is, we're in one of those thought processes. and we just let it unfold, and it feels good because the sympathetic nervous system is now pouring norepinephrine into our system. We feel it's a very euphoric feeling. It's wonderful. It can even make us cry. And here we are in this space. Whatever your fantasy is, just get clear what that might be. If it's a car, if it's a house, if it's vacations, if it's just finally being out of debt and above it all, whatever that might be, if we go into that space, what we know is when we wake up the next morning and we're facing a companion that's in a bad mood, or we get one of those emails from one of our prospects that doesn't want to see us, or someone cancels an order, anything, little teeny things. It could be the top on the salt shaker breaks. Anything doesn't fit that expectation, that unrealistic expectation of how life should be. Not that it'll never be that way, but because of the thought process, that is the way our mind thinks it is. Anytime it shows up differently, the body is going to go into that autonomic response we've talked about a couple weeks ago, where instead of norepinephrine now coursing through our body, the sympathetic nervous system is releasing cortisol. Now, cortisol is very interesting. The word is antithesis, which means the absolute opposite. The absolute opposite of norepinephrine is cortisol. And that's what the body releases. Norepinephrine, or cortisol in this case. The cortisol kicks the norepinephrine off of the cell. It's a ligand. It's hooked to a receptor on the cell communicating this euphoric message. Kicks it off. Taps on the cell. New receptor opens up for cortisol. Connects. Begins communicating a very stressful message. We've got a lot of receptors in our stomach and our shoulders. That feeling we get. Now, when that happens with the cortisol, we know that the amygdala, the fight or flight center in our brain, that little almond-shaped thing at the top of our brainstem, starts sending out little fear dendrites up into our prefrontal cortex to shut down all of the extraneous energy. It's called metabolic energy. It's centralizing all of the energy in the fight or flight center of our brain, so that we can fight this terrible enemy that's attacking us, called reality. Now, this is the beginning stages of fear. When we first get the first cortisol surge, and the fear dries, it feels uncomfortable. What is the intuition do in the body? It's now been blunted. It's not functioning effectively. But what is functioning begins to read this feeling and intuits that something's wrong. It tells the brain that there is a problem. This is the false evidence that appears real. Now that we're starting to feel this anxiety, what happens is the mind starts to say, something's wrong. We can feel that something's wrong. It's like someone's conspiring against us. You've heard the word paranoia. Extreme cases of this result in paranoia. We all have a little bit of paranoia in us. It's like if one person's going to quit the business, maybe everybody's quitting. Maybe they're out talking to everybody. Maybe they're recruiting them to another company. We start imagining all kinds of things. Our very vivid imagination, which used to be engaged in fantasy, is now engaged in just the opposite, which is catastrophe. Starts to catastrophize. Worst case scenario starts to play them out. We're thinking what we call straw stories. If you look through your hand across the room, you make a fist out of your hand, look through the end of it like it's a telescope, and just look across the room. I'm looking across the room, and there's this white buffalo over on one of my desks, and I'm just looking at it. That's all I can see. But yet, from that very little information, we start to create stories. And our mind, because it's so vivid, creates a story that maybe this person is saying this about us, and this person is saying that about us, or this is happening. And when the mind thinks it, remember, same brain chemistry, brain circuitry, So the mind thinks it's real. That's why we sometimes write those emails, make those phone calls, make those comments to people that we later regret, because the mind actually thinks it knows what's going on. This is a very difficult time to be conscious. So here we are getting these feelings, and our mind is now creating negative images, which creates increased secretion of cortisol and fear dendrites. Can you start to see the spiraling effect of fear? All of a sudden, there's more false evidence appearing real. And we intuit that new information, and it was, oh man, it's even worse than I thought. And that causes us to create more images in our mind because of the extent of this analytical and goal-setting measurements. They're not the only source, they're the primary source. The primary source of this, we create these vivid images, and every time we do, the body just sends out more cortisol, more fear dendrites, and we're spiraling into worst-case scenarios. Now, I'll give you an example of how this might work on a very practical basis. I want to take you to a Friday afternoon about 5 o'clock. You're on your way home. You just met with an entire family. You've been working with the father of this family for several weeks. He's come to several meetings. He expressed interest in having you come over and make a presentation to everyone. And you did. And it went well. And everybody signed up for your business and bought the maximum package possible, whatever that is. 10 of them. 10 of them. All at one time. Would this be a great afternoon? Oh, so excited. And you're driving home. It's about an hour-long drive. You left at 4. You pull in your driveway at 5. And someone in your family comes running out and says, where have you been? Have you had your cell phone turned off? We've been trying to reach you for the last hour. Oh, what's going on? Well, John Smith, that guy you met with this afternoon, he's been trying to get a hold of you on your cell phone. That's when you realize that you turned it off at the meeting and you never turned it back on. You're going to surprise everybody when you got home with the exciting news. You've just been all the way home. Oh, my goodness, those 10 people tell 10 people each, and they tell 10 people each, and, oh, you work through this, and that person buys that, and pretty soon you've got the new boat or the new car or the debts are all paid off or the new home is purchased. You've got a whole hour into this process, a very, very vivid visualization in what it's going to be like when all of this happens and then. And there you are at 5 o'clock staring at your cell phone. And you realize he's been trying to get a hold of you. Well, did he say anything? Yes. He said, please call his office. So you call. And it rings, and it rings, and it rings. And with each ring, you get this, what could be wrong? What could be wrong? And then the secretary answers. You say, hi. This is Dave Blanchard. I met with John. Oh, yes, yes, yes. John was trying to get a hold of you. He waited as long as he could, but he couldn't. He had to leave. He's gone away for the weekend. But let me see here. I got a note here somewhere. Don't do anything until you talk to me. Don't do anything until you talk to me. You're sitting there holding these applications in your hand and these checks in your hand, these credit cards in your hand, statement, you know, ready to bill, and you're going, well, can I reach him? She says, no, he left this afternoon, and he'll be out of cell range until Monday morning. But he asked, could you call him back at 8 o'clock on Monday? And you say, well, of course I can. Thank you very much. And you hang up the phone, and you're staring at the applications, the checks. Don't do anything till you talk to him. Oh, my goodness. Tell me about your weekend. Tell me about your weekend. How available are you to those you love most? How likely are you to feel like prospecting and making phone calls and staying in touch with people? I can tell you that right then, for most people, there'll be a surge of cortisol and then a surge of those fear dendrites that will cause us to start into an endless cycle of worst-case scenarios. Now, some might say, I don't go there, been there before, I've learned how to avoid that, and oh, what a wonderful place to be. Most have not reached that point. Most have not. Have you ever been to an arcade where those little monkey heads pop up and you've got a mallet and you hit one, another one pops up, you hit that one, another one pops up, you hit that one, another one pops up. You just can't get them to stay down. It's a little bit like these thoughts. You keep saying, I don't know what's going on. There's no reason to make any decision until Monday. And then, boom, you get this thought process about you're not going to be able to pay your mortgage or your car, or you're not going to be able to buy this, or all this kinds of anxiety that's translating into fear, which causes even more cortisol to be released and even more fear dendrites to be released. And we can obsessively spend an entire weekend. I had one client who said to me, when I asked, what would you do? He said, I would get in my car and hunt him down. He'd want to find out what the problem was. Well, after spending a whole weekend in this kind of torture Monday morning, finally, and Dave calls John's phone number, and John answers the phone. Hi, John, this is Dave. How you doing? Oh, great. Did you get my call? Yes, yes, I did. Thank you. He said, you know, on the way to the car, you and I talked about getting together with our wives at the dinner theater, and you were going to stop by and buy tickets on the way home. And I forgot, next Friday's my wife's birthday. I got people coming in from all over the country. Is there any way that we could do it the following Friday? I hope somebody's chuckling. Of course, that would work out great. And then he says, oh, by the way, I met with some really great friends this weekend, and those people are all excited about this business. I'm going to be bringing them to the meeting this week. Would you be able to handle 22 people that night? You smile, oh, yes, no problem. Been thinking about you, too. So excited about where we're headed with this. And let's have a great time together. And he says, wonderful. Well, you have a great couple of days, and I'll see you on Wednesday night or Thursday night. And he hangs up the phone. And what do? Everybody do it with me. Just take a big, deep breath. And we get to have a little surge of dopamine. A little surge of norepinephrine, so we feel a little better about the situation. Fear, false evidence appearing real. The greatest thing that we can do to stop the false evidence is to make absolutely sure that we're using our minds constructively throughout the day, that we avoid with fury fantasy and catastrophe and counterfeit pleasure, that we do everything to avoid this negative place or this fantastical place where we create unrealistic expectations. If we can avoid this piece, we can eliminate a significant percentage of our fear. So that's one way before it ever happens. Number two is a very conscious process, and the neuroscientists tell us that it's Herculean to do this in the moment that's occurring. It can be done, I know, because I've had to go through this process to root it out of my life. And that is that when you're in the middle of one of these moments, you have a conscious moment where you say, I know I'm feeling this way. I know I feel awful and angry and I'm afraid. I'm scared to death that this is going to happen. I know that's what I'm feeling, but I know this is not true. I know this is not true. And every fiber of my body, every cell of my body is screaming that it's true, but I know that it's not. This is just a chemical that's been released in my body. A molecule of emotion, Candace Pert calls it, that's been released in my body because of an unrealistic expectation, most likely, that's now been threatened, and I just need to go do a few things to get this to drain out of my system. one of the most important things I can do is laugh. Laughter is cathartic. It's cleansing. It'll cleanse this from your body. Two is exercise. Three is music and meditation, prayer. These are very powerful forms of quieting this part of our mind down to give our body a chance to release the cortisol and release the fear dendrites, let them bleed off, if you will, so that we can restore our minds. That's why when we wake up in the morning, we generally don't have as much fear as we had when we were asleep at night. We have cleansed our body, if you will. We've regained the perspective. Now we can have that tsunami of emotions hit us very quickly and be back there. But generally when we first wake up in the morning, we're a little bit clearer. We're not as angry. That's another reason why it's always advisable when you're writing one of those emails that you don't send it till the next morning. You know, these thought processes want to send it right now to make a statement, to get this handled the way it ought to be handled. And if we wait till the next morning, we read it, we might even laugh at it and go, wow, man, I was so out of control. If I'd have sent that, I'd have been in damage control all day. I don't want to be in damage control. So when you're in this moment of consciousness, just say to yourself, this is one of the options, this is not real. I am not going to go there. Not today. Not today. I'm just going to be still and let this clear. And if I am thinking that I should call someone and give them a piece of my mind, I will wait. If I'm going to send an email, I'm going to wait. I am not going to overreact because I know from past experience I will simply be in damage control. Well, this is a very interesting challenge. These expectations that create this fear. Now, before I go any further into a couple of the things that we can do, does anybody have any questions about this at this point in our discussion? If you do, just come on the line and just say, Dave, and I'll acknowledge you.
Hey, Dave?
Yes.
How do you know, when you hear these voices or whatever, how can you discern between the fact that maybe it's your intuition telling you not to do something or whatever, or knowing that it is actually a negative thought?
It's been my experience that intuition is generally very quiet. And it's not fearful. It's peaceful, but it's quiet. It's like a still, small voice. This one creates anxiety and physical feelings that generally accompany those thoughts. And if you can trace back the source, what is happening right now? For an example, prompted a thought. For an example, when you're coming back from a meeting like this that I mentioned, and you get one of those phone calls or one of those emails, and you say to yourself, have I, within the last 24 hours, and this is a very honest question to explore, have I in the last 24 hours been fantasizing? It's been my experience that whenever I'm having that kind of fear that we're discussing, I can always tie it to an event within the last 24 hours. If you just go race ahead and start thinking about what it's going to be like when you're going to have all of this money and everything's going to finally be solved, know in the moment when you're doing it that within 24 hours you're going to be in a fear cycle. If you catch yourself in a fear cycle, go back and say, was I actually in that space? That's probably the closest answer. Now, you also are asking a question that's very sensitive, because I happen to believe in a spiritual part of this equation where we can be prompted, inspired. We can kind of feel or intuit things. Intuition warns me about a person or a situation. Most of the time when it's got a little element of paranoia in it, like they're trying to attack me or something is trying to destroy me, typically that's not intuition. Typically that's not. We generally find, even when there is some modicum of truth, that we have blown it out of proportion. What has your experience been? If you're still with me, what has your experience been?
Sorry, I just remuted. Probably more on the spiritual side. Sometimes we, you know, you have something that happens and you're like, should I do it, should I not? And you have that indecision where there's not exactly a fear, but more of just an indecision of, okay, I need to make the decision and decide if this is right. And then once you do, obviously you don't have that fear and anxiety. So that really ended up for me where when you said that. So
good. Well, sometimes in that moment, the indecision is a source of fear, and when we finally take the action, we might feel more at peace. I know Maxwell Maltz made a great comment. I'm going to paraphrase it, probably butcher it. But he said there's no such thing as a good decision. You make a decision, and then you work like heck to make it a great decision. It's what we do with it. It's not always in the making of it. And sometimes we can get to a point that we're paralyzed. Should I turn left? Should I turn right? Should I buy a red dress or a blue dress? We can get so caught up in the right-wrong of a systemic thought that we can be paralyzed in decision-making in general. Most of the time when that's occurring, we're dealing with chemicals in our body, not real intuition, not the kind where you're picking up on sensitivity of issues. And back to that comment one more time, it's more of a peaceful feeling. It's been my experience that the spiritual intuition, that little guidance that you might get. In Christian circles, we would call that the Holy Ghost, that you get that kind of a feeling. Now, I'm going to take this one step further so that you can feel this. It's called mirror neurons. This is a discovery just in the last less than a decade that we are really built to connect with one another, and that in our amygdala, that fight-or-flight center where all those fear dendrites come from, that the majority of people who are involved in your business have high levels of empathy and intuition. And what comes with that is an overabundance of a neuron, a specific neuron called a mirror neuron, like mirror, mirror on the wall. And that mirror neuron acts like a radar, a built-in radar system for us. When we're talking to someone, that those mirror neurons are picking up all kinds of subtle signals. I can tell you how subtle it can be. The face has 200 sets of muscles. That's a lot. And the math is 2 to the power of P minus 1, which would be 2 to the power of 200 minus 1. That's like billions of different combinations of muscles on the face. The mirror neurons, oddly enough, can discern every single one of them. Now, you may have seen a movie on television where an FBI specialist could read faces, and they're often trained at the highest levels to read 1,000 or 2,000 different facial expressions. Their training pales in comparison to a naturally God-given gift of a mirror neuron, so it picks up all of this information. And now we're getting the information, and it's not coming through the optic nerve to the thalamus to create a visual. It's coming through the optic directly to the amygdala, and it's creating a feeling. Either we feel comfortable or we feel uncomfortable. We can even feel fearful around someone. This is one you're going to want to pay attention to. When you are, like for an example, you're working with someone that you want to bring into your business, and you really want to have them in the business, but there's this little voice whispering in the back of your mind, nope, not a good idea. And you do it anyway. That's kind of how you know, because it's so quiet and so still that you override it yourself. You do it anyway. And then 6 months later, you wish you could give their money back because they're just draining you. They're just sucking the energy right out of you. And then it's like a megaphone screaming, I told you so. You shouldn't have. You knew this was going to happen. Because the truth of the matter is those mirror neurons pick up information long before our conscious thought. Matter of fact, they fire at twice the speed of a normal neuron, so they're very, very fast. They're picking up all kinds of information. So when you get that kind of subtlety, that would come from a mirror neuron. Pay attention. I was talking with a coaching client not too long ago who had a sister in New York. Sister was walking down the street, and she was in a part of town that was difficult, and she turned around. There was a man following her. She does not have a prejudicial bone in her body. And she felt awful because she was feeling uncomfortable about this man who was a different race than her. And she just dismissed her intuitive feeling, and a few moments later she was accosted. Now, that's not a racial issue. It's an intuitive issue. If your intuition gives you one of those little warnings, those you want to pay attention to, because it's a warning signal. Something isn't right here, because the mirror neurons can pick up thousands and thousands of more information than our eyes can actually process into visual images. We know this is true because they've got a concept called affective blindness, where a man had the nerve to his thalamus and to his visual to see the picture had been damaged. So all he saw was darkness. However, when they put a picture in front of his face, his eye could process the picture directly to his amygdala, and he could tell you what that person was feeling. Sad. Angry. Oh, ecstatic. With tremendous accuracy. It's called affective blindness. Could not see pictures, but the eye was still processing images to his thalamus. So we know this is a very powerful piece and can be a warning signal. So we want, it's a great question, we want to pay attention to those little subtle signals. These generally escalate. They escalate, the ones we're talking about, the false evidence appearing real, and they create that kind of paranoia and anxiousness and that kind of fear. Those are the ones we know are just being driven by our thought processes. Now, it doesn't mean they won't have a worst-case scenario. Anybody had one? I know I have. I know the worst-case scenario actually happened. Devastating. It was like a right cross. It just knocked me off my... And the tendency we have when that has occurred in our life, Marty Seligman talks about this in his book, the challenge we have is that we get one of these feelings and we start preparing every possible scenario so that no matter what happens, we can handle it. Well, it's been my experience that it's not really about preparation. It's about protection. Last time that right cross got through, we did not have a counterpunch, so to speak, and it just knocked us out. And this time, we will think of every possible scenario. Just imagine how active the mind has got to be to come up with everything and an answer for every one of them. Oh, the amount of energy we pour into this catastrophizing is absolutely exhausting, especially when the majority of those who engage in this have very high levels of empathy and very high levels of what we would call practical judgment. And with those two thought processes, they could come up with great solutions in the moment if, in fact, it happened. So if you find yourself, when something starts to go wrong or it feels like it's going wrong, and you start obsessively thinking about every worst-case scenario, just know it's probably because one time one of them actually did happen, and you're not about to let it happen again. My father used to paraphrase Mark Twain. He said, "Don't tell me that worrying doesn't work, because everything I worry about never happens." And it's the truth. Most of the time it doesn't happen. We can actually become addicted to catastrophe, very drama addicted, because when it doesn't turn out that bad, we get to do that. And we get to feel that dopamine or that norepinephrine coursing in our... It feels so good to not have it turn out so bad. The challenge is the damage has already been done at the cellular level in our bodies. At age 65, Don Kennedy, one of our coaches, reports that the majority of his geriatric patients, like 95%, their pathology is directly related to catastrophizing. They never learned to control this. And the cortisol releases on a chronic basis in their body has destroyed their immune systems, exacerbated their diabetes, caused hypertension. The list goes on. It's so destructive. So if anybody on the phone tonight is listening to this and going, man, I do that. I get those really high from norepinephrine when I'm fantasizing, and then I'm in these really lows, and something happens, and I get anxious and fearful and even angry. If you're having those kinds of reactions, you now know what's creating it. And the way to solve it, the greatest way to solve it, is to learn the five constructive ways to use your mind so that whenever you're not present in the now, actually doing something, you are constructively creating in your mind, mentally rehearsing something, seeking inspiration, exploring possibilities without making tangible commitments, problem solving, and planning and goal setting. I'm going to throw a little plug in for the program right now because I just finished recording at 5 o'clock this afternoon the third hour and final hour of the second quality of an intentional creator, goals and expectations. I have got 2 hours on 1 hour on fantasy, catastrophe, and counterfeit pleasure so you can really understand it, and over an hour on the five constructive ways in which you can use your mind, almost an hour and a half, and with detailed examples for each, and planning and goal setting I've gone through, how to create a companion. If you're single and you want a companion, how to create one. If you're in a companionship, how to nurture it and have it grow. If you're starting a business, how to use goal planning and goal setting constructively to grow your business. And last, if you're an employee, how to bring value to your workplace and build your business. So I just want to let you know that's been recorded. You'll see it up by next Tuesday. It'll be in the back office for those of you who already have the 7 Laws of Abundance. That'll be a free upgrade for you. Otherwise, it's going to be $99 to have that 3-hour program with a workbook. Great program. Well, thanks for letting me put in the plug. That's the fear piece. Now I want to talk about one more piece in fear. And before I do, let me just open the lines up again if there's anyone who's got a question. Any comments or questions? Any brave souls out there that might say, man, I am doing this. This is driving me crazy. Anybody want to make a comment? If you're talking, we're not hearing you. So if you have one, something comes up for you, just please say, Dave, and we'll bring you on the line. I want to take you one other place. I want to show you another way to overcome fear. This is a very practical way. I want you to take a piece of paper, and draw a horizontal line. Turn the paper landscape and draw a horizontal line across the paper. So you get a line all the way across the paper. On the left-hand side, make a little notch and write the words financial prison. One of the great causes of fear is not just an unmet expectation. That's the greatest single cause of this kind of fear. The other is living in scarcity, where life really is kind of on the edge. When we're in a financial prison, the hallmark is that we are working, let's write this down, working to pay our monthly nut. Working to pay our monthly nut. Now today is July 28th. August 1st is coming up. I believe it's Saturday. Is that correct? How many of us might go on August 1st? Rent's due, house payment, cars, first of the month bills. Anybody have one of those moments on the 1st of the month, and then again on the 15th of the month, where there's a little of anxiety, where you're facing the reality of what you've got available versus the expenses that you have versus what you'd like to have in your life and can't afford? So the hallmark of being in a financial prison is that we are working to pay our monthly nut. The emotions that we're experiencing are stress and pain, frustration, all call culminating in fear. Just write those down below. So financial prison, working to pay the monthly nut, stress and pain, frustration, fear. Now, here's an interesting piece. We've been doing this for a decade in this country, and it just about crippled us. I am just praying that we can survive this. Because as a nation, we have expectations, individually and as collectively as a nation, things we'd like to have in our lives, better furniture, nicer cars, nicer homes. So when our income goes up, our tendency, we get an extra $100 a month, is to take that $100 and leverage it into debt to get some of the things we'd like to have, which means we're still in a financial prison. We're just broke at a higher level. This is one of the great risks of this business that you're in, is prematurely creating a lifestyle you have not yet earned, believing that we must create the facade of success. And I think that's going away. I don't think there's as much pressure to create the facade of success to be successful. It's kind of cool now to have your cars paid off, to not have a mortgage. That's getting kind of cool, which is awesome to know. Because if we stay in this financial prison, no matter how much money we make, we'll never get out of it. We'll still be in it. And you don't want to spend a life where you're working to pay the monthly nut. Even if it's $1 million a year in income and an $85,000 a month monthly nut. I have met many that are in that situation. Now, in the middle of this line, put a little notch and write, financial freedom. Financial freedom. And underneath that, write, working to create wealth. Working to create wealth. When we finally reach this point, we've disciplined ourselves not to buy everything and anything with every dollar that we've got. We're actually investing our money. We're creating reserves. We're finally getting to a point that our reserves will pay our monthly expenses. And then we replace it quickly with new productivity. We have crossed into a very sacred place called financial freedom. Here we get to experience enthusiasm, which is defined as God within. We get to have peace of mind. Peace of mind. This place does actually exist. And when your monthly bills and finances are typically the greatest source of fear, when your monthly bills are paid for out of a surplus, and you don't even know what month, what day of the month it is in terms of your bills, when you're just working to create wealth, you are in a financial place of financial freedom. Now, very few people talk about this place, because very few people know about it. Most are in financial prison regardless of their income. And they think they're going to leap from the financial prison on the left-hand side of this page over to the far right-hand side, which is called financial independence. Financial independence. See, when we reach financial independence, we have invested our money wisely. It is now creating passive income. It's one of your goals, many of you in the business that you're in. Passive income through residual incomes or investments of some kind. You now have enough residual income that it pays your monthly nut without touching the principal. And now you are working, still working, but working to contribute to the world. Think about this sequence. Working to pay the monthly nut in a form of slavery, scarcity, stress, and pain. And many continue just to get deeper and deeper into that prison with thicker and higher walls. The wise one stops and says, enough is enough. I'm paying off my debts. I'm going to create investment that will create a reserve. And once my reserve is sufficient that I can pay my monthly bills, I'm now in financial freedom. I now can let go of fear. Fear. Now, I want to tell you how sweet this place is to not have fear about your finances. I can also tell you there are many who are in financial freedom who are, for the first time perhaps in a long time, tasting occasionally a little bit of fear because maybe their reserves are being hit a little harder than they have been in a long time. This economy is a scary place for many, especially those who haven't experienced fear in a long time. I'm going to smile because I know everybody on this phone represents a really nice and wonderful company. All of you, regardless of your product, have a tremendous opportunity right now in this marketplace, not just to recruit to those who are in a financial prison to help them get out, but to provide another passive income source for those who are in financial freedom who never, ever want to go back into the financial prison. They've been there. They know what it tastes like. Oh, could you have a rich dialogue with these people about being in a position where your bills are paid out of reserves and you're working to create wealth, and what's this economy doing to your reserves? What happens if it stays like this for another 6 months or another 9 months or another year? How open are you to considering possibilities, other sources of passive income to sustain your reserves? Oh, this could be a wonderful conversation. But just know this place exists. Some of you on the phone, maybe many of you on the phone, are already in financial freedom. You know what it feels like. This is a glorious place to live where there is no fear from finances. I want you to imagine for a moment, if you're not here, what it would be like to go for an entire day without fear. Entire day. There's no fear. Where you could be in creation all day, talking to people, building your business. No fear. Now imagine doing that for a week. Now imagine doing that for a month. Now imagine doing that for a year. Can you imagine what this would do to your self-esteem? What this would do to your ability to own your own gifts and talents? What it would do to your ability to serve others, to free you up to serve other people? Because we go from working to pay the nut to working to create wealth to working full-time to contribute to the world. A full-time partner with the power that governs abundance and bringing abundance to the lives of other people. The one place that creates the most joy on this planet. So, if you want to lessen fear, mitigate fear, first of all, you're going to want to learn how to use those five, use your mind five constructive ways to eliminate unrealistic expectations. And eliminate the fantasy and the catastrophe so that you're not stewing in all of this negative energy, that you're taking this very powerful thought process and using it in a way to find better and better way to serve other people, to build your business faster and faster. You want to create that piece. As you're doing that, you want to curb your spending so that you can build reserves, so that you can reach a point of financial freedom. That's not independence yet, but financial freedom. That will eliminate fear around money, which will eliminate most of your fear. There's fear that can be around relationships. We may not have time to get into that tonight, but there can be. But the majority of it is around finances, what we'd like to have in our lives versus what we have, the unrealized expectations, and even scarcity, survival mode. So we get rid of the fantasy, we get out of the financial prison, and we eliminate 90% plus of all the fear that we can experience that's false evidence appearing real. The faster you get into that financial freedom, the faster you master those five constructive ways to use your mind, the sooner fear is gone. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to awake in the morning free of fear and just live and serve and how much you could do in a day if you weren't dealing with those tethers of fear. So those would be the two things. I also mentioned that in the moment, you can make the conscious decision to say, this is not real. This is not real. Even though every fiber of my body says that it is, this is not real. I'm not going to react to this. I'm not going to do anything crazy. I'm just going to let this drain out of my body. Tomorrow morning, I'll feel differently. And sure enough, the next morning, you do. Well, we've got about 3 minutes. Is there any comment or question you'd like to explore in the last few moments of our session today?
Dave, you mentioned about going to sleep, waking up, and feeling better about it. But I think that's only because years and years and years of dealing with the fear of not having enough money and the things that are related to that, that I've come up with a way to deal with that stuff, and I go to sleep on it. When I wake up, it's still there.
How's your business doing?
I have a job right now. The job's not doing so well. I mean, the company as a whole isn't.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a business besides that? Do you have a home-based business that you're working on?
Yes, I do.
Okay. How's that business coming along?
It's mediocre. It has this month of some, you know, awesome production, and then it has months where it's not.
As you're thinking about these calls, and I thank you, you become somewhat anesthetized to the fear. You just learn to deal with it. It's like having chronic pain. You just learn to live with the chronic pain. That's probably not the healthiest way to approach it, but it certainly is helping you to survive, would you say? Would that be accurate? At least you're surviving.
Yeah, definitely.
What could I bring to the call next week? If you said, Dave, I've been in this for a long time. I've been dealing without having enough money for a long time. I've got all kinds of fear around it. Do you have a family, by the way?
Yeah.
You have a family, children?
Children,
so you've got the whole thing. Okay, so you've got all the responsibility of being that father and that provider, and all that comes with it. If you had one topic, now you know where the fear is coming from, and you're going, yep, understand that. No surprise, Dave. You haven't told me anything new tonight. I got that. Perhaps you might know a little bit more about not fantasizing, but if you're in scarcity that's bad enough, you may not even dare go there. You may have stopped dreaming. That's possible. What would you want me to talk about next Tuesday? How could I serve you?
Well, what I'm thinking right now is I'm definitely good at fantasizing. And the calls in the last few weeks have aided me to, dig deeper to get the passion to create and, well, to just ignite the passion because, in the couple of years I've been involved with my home-based business, it's like a never-ending cycle of getting remotivated to be productive again and then experiencing success, but then being able to maintain it. And then you fall into a dip cycle that I just don't have an answer for your question. I'm mostly just thinking out loud.
Well, I'm hearing things and see if this makes any sense. Were you hoping when you got in your home-based business that it would be easier than it is?
I guess I picked it up. The answer would be yes.
Mm-hmm. Here's the toughest question of all. How tired are you?
I'm not extremely tired, but I probably just kind of cruise every day with the same energy level. It's not a level 10. If 10 was the highest, I'd probably fluctuate on a 6 to an 8 on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the kind of tired, not necessarily physically like I want to sleep, just sick and tired of having to go through the routine every day. Do you want to just get away from it, ever?
The reality hits me in the face just as soon as I think that, knowing that that's not a possibility.
Yeah. Okay, good. This is helping. Because we're dealing with the formula that's present most of the time when someone's doing a home-based business. Would it be helpful for everyone, and anybody else that wants to join us in this conversation for a moment, if next week I gave you the formula for the activity level and specific things you want to do on a daily basis for 90 days to drive your business? Would anybody be interested in a 90-day plan for how to drive your business?
Yes.
You wouldn't.
Dave, I would be.
Now, I'll prepare it, and I'll deliver it for you next week. Just keep in mind that it's going to require a tremendous commitment, so I want everyone this week to be studying a very specific scroll. I want you to pull out scroll number 5, I'll live this day as if it is my last. Now, this isn't the fact that it's going to be, you know, you're going to die tomorrow, but this day will. You know, in a few hours, July 28, 2009, is gone forever. We don't get it back. Did we use the day wisely? Did we waste part of this day? Did we just go through the motions, spin our wheels? What did we do? Because what I'm going to bring to you next Tuesday is going to require that every single day you wake up early with this plan that I'll share with you, and you execute on it every day, one day at a time, for 90 days. It's a miracle plan, because 90 days from now, your life will be different. If you actually will do it, you're going to meet lots of thought processes, and you're going to find out that it may not be the job, it may not be the career, it may not be the family responsibilities, it just may be some old sabotaging thought processes given to us, accumulated, I should say, over a lifetime. And with courage of over 90 days, you can start to let them go. There will be a new person born, Og says. Today I begin a new life. We'll do that every day for 90 days. Today I begin a new life. Today I shed my old skin, which had too long suffered the bruises of failure and the wounds of mediocrity. It's like a rock tumbler. If anybody's ever been a rock collector, and you stick a rock in a rock tumbler and it smooths off the edges. The truth of the matter is that we're in a tumbler called life. And we are either running the tumbler or we're in the tumbler. It's one or the other. We don't get any other options. This 90-day plan will be running the tumbler. And we know that if we're not running it, we're in it. And when we're in it, we're getting beat up by the baseball bat of life. And it is painful. Bruises of failure, wounds of mediocrity that Og talks about. They are inevitable when we're not running the rock tumbler. So let me share with you next week how to do that for 90 days. That'll be our plan. Come prepared to take notes and to put this plan into effect. And you can create miracles in your life. So study Scroll 5 this week. I'll greet this day or live this day as if it is my last. And come ready and committed next week. If you can, ponder this week. Be with this week. Say, wow, am I really willing to pay the price? Am I really willing to let go? Am I really willing to become this person? Am I willing to do what's necessary to get out of this prison? Well, having been in that prison, I can tell you how sweet it is to be out. It is worth whatever price you pay to get out of that financial prison. It is. So let's come prepared next week for that occasion to kick off our 90-day program. Any last comments from anyone before we wrap up the session? Okay, everyone. Well, thank you. Let's take on these expectations. We've talked about them now for a couple of weeks. So we start letting go of fantasy and catastrophe. That'll start to help us lessen our fear. Then let's put a 90-day plan together that gets us out of a financial prison. Have a great week, everyone.